Hey, what's going on, everyone? It's another episode of the Juke Joint. As always, I'm a host, Aaron, and another host, of course, joining me is the one and only Jacob Whitmer. What's going on?
I'm not as good a host. That's the thing, though, is that you have to recognize there's different levels of hosts, and I'm definitely not the superior.
I always feel like when I start off this whole podcast or any public conversation with you, it always turns out like I speak to you as if I've not spoken to you in years, like, hey, what's going on, or like I don't know you, but like, you
well,
know,
because we're talking this, like, this is the one chance we get to discuss our day.
That's true.
I mean, it's just that thing of like it was different from when we were all in the same location generally, and you know, we could bump into each other and be messaging each other all the time about, hey, this just happened in my life or whatever. Now it's like, hey, I don't know what he's doing on the other side of the country.
Yeah.
We only have this moment of time to discuss things amongst ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we're kicking off the new year. Our first episode finally came out a few days ago.
Our first three episodes finally came out.
Yeah, kind of dropped it once. It's so nice to have them like hosted online and just that whole process taken care of. Now I can focus more on the promoting and creation of it.
Which
in
is
the
tricky
aftermath.
On my end. It's tricky to promote on my end because... So a couple of hours ago, we're taping this on January 4th,
mm-hmm.
and a couple of hours ago from taping this, I've put out the video on my channel saying, here's the state of everything, and I was linking to all my projects, like the gaming weekend and the concert film from last year,
mm-hmm.
and I wanted to put in a link embedded in the video to the podcast,
mm-hmm.
and the way YouTube works, it says, well, you need at least 1,000 subscribers before you can start linking to other websites.
It's...
And I'm like...
Yes, I don't know. I feel like YouTube with their options used to be so much more broad. You could link. I mean, not just with linking stuff, but just the features and stuff have kind of shrank over the years and become, you know, only accessible to the top tier users.
Yeah, because that's the whole system they got running with now. Everything to the top creators and nothing to the lower people.
Well, so how was your New Year's? You do anything exciting or just sit around?
I sat around mainly. There wasn't much to report on with New Year's. It was one of those things where, I enjoyed New Year's Day.
Mm-hmm.
I got to spend some time with my stepbrother and stepsister. We hung out, played Smash, had a lot of food.
Awesome. I haven't played that game yet.
What, the new Smash Bros?
Yeah, no, I was on the phone with Zane yesterday. We were talking about, and he mentioned he's been playing like nothing but that. And I'm just thinking, I feel like I'm behind. I feel like everyone's playing it without me.
Ah, behind the times. In all fairness, I haven't been playing it that much either. My method is that I play Smash with other people. I don't enjoy playing games like that single player.
Mm-hmm.
It gets pretty boring after a while.
Oh, yeah,
not,
no
like,
doubt.
In the room of someone else and you're sparring verbally and all this other stuff.
Yeah. But, well, sounds like you had a fun New Year's. You said it was sitting around at your house, or were you at one of their places or what?
No, it was pretty much just at my place.
What okay.
about you? What did you do for New Year's?
It wasn't too eventful. I'm trying to think how we started it off. Well, okay, I guess I'd say it was kind of cool. We started off with going to a zoo about 10 minutes up the road from my place, which is still weird for me to say every time I think about that. Just everything's so conveniently located here.
Mm-hmm.
But I got a zoo right up the street, and they do this thing called Zoo Lights, and it's kind of similar to, trying to think what to compare it to. If you've been to Ogilvy Park up in Wheeling during their, like, holiday lights thing.
I don't go up to Wheeling too often.
Okay, well,
it's a place that doesn't impress me.
But they do a thing every year here and there where, you know, they put up holiday lights and but you can drive through, but here it's the same thing. But, you know, you walk around the zoo at night and you know, they have lights everywhere and some exhibits and stuff open. So we did that, got to see a bunch of cool stuff, and they had the part of the aquarium open. I mean, that was super nice. And then came back home, made dinner at like 9 o'clock, and then went back out to downtown Tacoma. They had this free event with like live music and a beer garden and couple vendors and stuff. It wasn't anything fancy, but we went out there and they had like a R&B soul jazz band kind of kick off the New Year's. It was really cool.
That's cool. So yeah. You got to actually be out amongst the crowds of people.
It wasn't freezing, which was nice. This time last year we did New Year's in Chicago, and it was below zero.
It was
a
Chicago.
Nightmare. Yeah, well, I think it was below zero across the entire country at that point. So
this, I don't remember what I was doing that New Year's last year.
I know last year we were in Chicago. We watched the New Year's in New York happen at midnight there, and it was still 11 o'clock in Chicago, and we were passed out by 11:30. So we missed We missed New Year's in the Central Time Zone.
I tuned in to New Year's just in time to hear a cover version of Imagine, and I swear to God, one of the presenters said, "That's a great song by John Legend." I could be wrong, but I'm definitely sure that I tuned in just in time for someone to say John Legend wrote Imagine.
And I can't remember. I can't remember who performed that. Was that last year at the New York New Year's, right?
No, it was this year.
Oh, was it? Okay, I missed that.
It was
I thought
a couple days ago.
I thought someone last year did Imagine too.
They're probably doing it every year because it's like one of those hymns to the world. Which isn't even John Lennon's best song, but that's splitting hairs. So.
All right, but yeah, New Year, we finally got this podcast out, which is just awesome.
Yeah, like I said, I'm so glad it's finally out, and we could start doing this, you know?
Yeah.
Because we've been working on it since...
it's like May or June of last year?
May or June, so this was like a project that we spent half a year on, and it was nice for it to finally get released and hopefully be listened to.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't know the statistics of everything, but...
Well, I can say we've made a whopping 11 cents so far.
11 cents?
11 cents.
I'm going to buy all the gumballs.
I think out here that will get me 1/4 of a gumball.
Wow.
Not like the big ones you get, like the big like Jawbreaker size. I'm talking like little tiny, like dollar store.
Oh, yes.
Like Hubba Bubba or Double Bubble, whatever it's called. Hubba Bubba, Double Bubba, Double Bubba. I don't know. Yeah, exactly. So.
I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, so should we say what our system is? We've got it set up that every 100 plays, we get a dollar.
Something like that, yeah. It's actually...
Every time someone listens, you've gifted us a penny to split between two people. So.
I guess it would be beneficial to talk about it because they are a paying... Like the host service is a paying sponsor, surprisingly, so... Not surprisingly, I mean it's a cool feature that's part of their platform.
It works itself out, doesn't it? All
yeah,
nice and tidy.
Yeah, I guess yeah. Speaking on that, because I know it's on our list of things to talk about anyway. It's just kind of touching on it a little bit because I do think it's a cool platform. I don't want to sell something I've not tried and kind of believe in. So the host we're using is called Anchor. It's anchor.fm is the site, and it's basically becoming. I think someone described it as like the YouTube of audio because it gives you a lot of creator features while allowing you to host your content for free, and then they handle distribution and all that stuff. So,
yes, but does it have the size audience of YouTube?
Because no, because it's still it's
I would
still
say that's what's going to decide whether or not it's the YouTube of audio is whether its listener base is huge. Because
yeah.
I would argue at that point, you could make a fair argument that the YouTube of audio currently would be SoundCloud because that has the audience numbers that draw people in.
I would say so.
Have all the tools.
Yeah.
But it has all of the audience support and interest.
Yeah, I feel like one thing I don't like SoundCloud for the fact that there's a real lack of features, and I feel like it's also YouTube. I would argue is oversaturated in some fashions, but to me, SoundCloud is extremely oversaturated with content. I mean, it's hard to make a name for yourself on SoundCloud, especially when a company like SoundCloud, I think, not even 2 years ago, they were, like, filing for bankruptcy and laid off a huge part of their staff. I don't know. To me, I'm interested in seeing where Anchor goes because I've been following it for about a year or so now. It's been just kind of on and off my radar, and I think they've finally got things worked out to where things are offering a lot to people. And
just in time for us.
Yeah, just in time for us, and I think... It seems like it's growing. I've seen a couple notable podcasts use it, at least notable that I listen to. Yeah, so I'm excited to see where it goes.
The twist is that it's such a niche audience, and we think it's all massive and successful.
Yeah, well, maybe it'll get
that. That's the style of all the other things I'm working on.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, one topic near and dear to my heart, and I know I texted you about this the other day, is I'm editing the episode, and I realized the original theme song we had was... I guess I thought we had the copyright license for it, but I don't know what happened.
So explain this to me, because I was quite confused and honestly quite drunk as you were messaging me about this on New Year's Day. So
Explain
to me what happened, because for those of you who don't know, which is everyone, on the first three episodes we had originally had a theme song that we were using to introduce the program. And then you messaged me and went... Well, we can't use it. It's copyrighted. And what are we going to do? Do we, like, come up with something new right now? And I was like, just send it out.
Yeah, so what happened was, so I switched to working from like anything podcast related now, I'm kind of doing on my laptop instead of my desktop. So on my desktop, I didn't have, or on my laptop, I don't have the original audio file. So I had to go back to the original website and download it. And I went to look at the license. You have, you know, different licenses, license options, and there's like a free one for educational benefits and stuff, which I think I downloaded last time as just a filler. But it was also part of the license that I swear said something along the lines of, you know, free for podcasts and that sort of thing. So downloaded it thinking we could use it. And then I go, I guess, I don't know if something changed in the new year, but I go back to my laptop because I couldn't find the file, go to download it again. And now the license is like $100 a year, which is like, I don't have that kind of money. So now we're without a theme song until we can come up with something or find a cheaper alternative or, you know, what have you. So
we'll just record a cover version of that stock music. So we've got microphones. We're all musicians.
I think that, or if I'm feeling lazy, I'll just track down to my friends that have, like, those music subscription things where they, like, license the music for you and they pay, like, $10 a month or whatever. And I'll just have them download me a license.
Wasn't there one group of people that it, like, said, oh, we're writing theme songs for people's podcasts, and you'd, like, message them last year on Twitter, like, hey, we got something we're working on.
Oh, I think... send it our way. I think Roswell Kid or something tweeted that as a joke, but I don't know. I think it would be cool if Roswell Kid did a theme for this, so if anybody from Roswell Kid's listening, hey. First of all, thanks for listening, that's cool. Second of all, write us some songs. We'll pay you in something.
We've technically
something.
We've been in the room with them. We've met them.
That's true.
I think I exchanged maybe about 5 words to some member of Roswell Kid. I didn't know who they were.
So I've talked to him a few times. I think maybe the singer remembers me. I don't know. I know he remembered me at least once, so I take that as a good sign. So yeah. So I guess we're without a theme song and stuff for now. My idea is, as we progress through this show, like developing it and stuff, I'd like to develop some standard, like, I want to go like one of those podcasts, all the weird sound effects and songs and stuff like that, but try to find some consistency with like music and branding it and that sort of thing. I guess that'll just come every time. Even like the artwork, I use like Anchor's on-site design, you know,
it
like
works.
It definitely works.
It's got the 50s hot rod car and jukebox.
Yeah,
pretty much a juke joint.
Yeah, so it definitely.
I would change the font, maybe.
Yeah, it was pretty limited in the font selection, but I figured that was probably the most popular one I could find, unfortunately. So, but eventually we'll move on from that, and we'll look nice and pro. We'll be the next Joe Rogan, but not Joe Rogan, thankfully.
Well, who knows? We'll see. I actually don't watch his show. Is it good?
I don't know. I watch it, or I guess I don't ever watch it. I actually listen to it. Depending on who the guest is. Mm-hmm. So I think the last one I listened to was Elon Musk, probably 3 months ago at this point.
Wasn't that the one where he...
where he smoked weed? Yeah.
He smoked weed and...
Oh, man, it was funny in the progression of the podcast, too, just because of, like... I think at one point Joe was like, are you sure you should be doing that? And he's like, oh, yeah, it's fine. And then, you know, Tesla shares dropped the same day, so...
Yeah, he's kind of lost track of the plot, hasn't he?
A little bit, but hey, the man's full of ideas.
Full of ideas. Unfortunately, his shareholders don't share the same ideals.
But yeah, with Joe Rogan, I wouldn't say they're hit and miss. I think it just depends on what you're listening to in the first place. And like, I got an episode with Dale Earnhardt Jr. I'm gonna listen to at some point.
Oh,
just cause,
well, there you go.
Because I mean, I feel like, yeah. Well, I think he's an interesting guy to interview, and he just put out a book and stuff. So, and it's like a 2 or 3 hour conversation. I mean, they go in depth on the interviews, which is another reason I like it. So, I think I just saw something yesterday. I guess Kanye West is going to be on the show soon, so that'll be interesting to see.
Oh, that's always fascinating when Kanye says things.
And you know that's probably going to be like a 5 hour conversation.
I mean, didn't he say something that like he suddenly said, oh, I changed my mind like about a month ago or something?
Something like that, yeah. I haven't really kept up with it.
I haven't cared enough to keep up with it. It was one of those things where I was like, well, okay, he shut his mouth off again. He was never really king of politics, ever. So it wasn't like, oh, wow, amazing, Kanye said another dumb, dumb thing.
Yeah.
are we shocked after how many years of him saying dumb, dumb things?
Yeah. Oh, well. But I'm interested to see where the conversation goes, because it's always like, I mean, it's always something new.
Yes. And, you know, I mean, like, here's the thing. If it's Kanye going on a show, I imagine I won't have to listen to it. I'll just, like, read the headlines that get reported on it the day after.
Well, at least you know you're they're accurate, because the whole Elon Musk thing, I mean, I'm looking at this photo and I'm like, well, like, maybe it wasn't as big of a deal as I was played out to be. And you listen to the podcast and, like, how everyone's talking about it is exactly how it went down.
I mean,
so I guess you shouldn't be surprised, but...
I mean, that's the thing, that when you're reporting on something that happened on a show, it's literally just, like, text recaps of here's what happened on the show. It's
exactly.
A plot synopsis of what it is. So, I mean...
Something publicly available like that, I mean, it's kind of hard to bend the truth a bit when somebody can just go watch it for themselves.
That's the key of reporting. You have to know what you're saying and getting into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so a topic you want to talk about here, and I'm interested to see how this goes.
So frightened.
It's not that I'm frightened. I'm just.
I don't think it's worth worrying about personally.
Well, I'm more so just curious on your take of it, and it's especially in the aftermath of this whole Louis C.K. thing again.
Okay, I'll save this anecdote for later. But so recently. I got on... This was how I spent my New Year's Day evening. I got on my phone, and I used the Google Chrome app, and I'm certain for those of you who don't know, on the Google Chrome app, if you pull up the homepage, first thing you see is, like, the Google search bar and little bookmarks for the pages you visit the most often. And then below is the articles for you. So these are the little articles that Google has collected from across the interwebs... that just happen to maybe pertain to topics that you search often or read up on often or things such as that, right?
Yeah.
And one evening I get on my phone and this article pops up and I read the whole thing and it makes me want to void my stomach. And this is from Bustle.
Mm-hmm.
Bustle, if you don't know, is an online publication targeted mainly towards younger women. And that's fine. I'm not going to be... That's not important to the discussion. The thing is that they put out this article called "These 13 Jokes from Seinfeld Are Super Offensive Now." And yes, that includes the soup Nazi. Now, humor is subjective. All art is subjective anyway. But, you know, humor is subjective. And what people are going to find funny... may not be funny to other people. Now, Seinfeld, to me, is a major influence on my comedy. I think it is the greatest American sitcom that's probably been made. And I recognize that there is a lot of counterweight to that. There is now a lot of blowback from people our age, because I'm 22 and Aaron is 24. And, there is sort of a blowback now from our generation, people going, oh, Jerry Seinfeld, not funny, not funny, not funny. And I can understand that, because quite frankly, I would say that the weakest part of Seinfeld was probably Jerry Seinfeld himself. He was not a strong actor, to his own admission, and I would say that there's a lot of episodes, particularly in the early seasons, that are just too dry, too slow, too dull. And there's a lot of episodes, particularly in the later seasons, that are too zany, cartoony, wacky, and just bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
So I can understand why there are people going, eh, it's not as funny now as it was in the 90s. I can completely understand that argument.
Mm-hmm.
What gets at me at this article is I understand people will take offense at jokes. Because by its very nature, John Cleese of Monty Python said something very, very smart, which is that... it's impossible for people to not be offended by some form of joke because all humor by its very nature is critical. And the reason why humor exists is because it is making a critical commentary on something. I think the only form of humor that doesn't do that is puns. But beyond that, that is what humor exists for, is critical commentary on something that someone either disapproves of or thinks is absurd. So then this article comes out. And, just to read some excerpts here. The titular star of the show, Jerry Seinfeld, has frequently spoken publicly about believing that society has become overly politically correct. So you can probably imagine how some of Seinfeld's non-PC humor could feel outdated today. Jerry Seinfeld has said that society has become too overly correct. I'm sorry about that. Oh, why are you messaging me this?
Oh, sorry.
You'll have to cut this out.
Sorry.
What? All right, well, you'll have to cut that out anyway.
Yeah.
So, Jerry Seinfeld, okay, snip, snip. Jerry Seinfeld has talked a lot about how society has become too overly politically correct, and this is not something that is exclusive to him. A lot of comedians of that generation are saying it.
Yeah.
I don't particularly agree with that sentiment. I don't think it's impossible to make humor that is politically correct. I think it's very, very easy. I think it's the lazy approach to not attempt, or to just go, I can't make anything funny anymore because people are too sensitive.
Yeah.
That's the lazy approach. If you're really going to try to, or if you're not going to try to do anything that is remotely like looking out for, oh, maybe this is offensive or maybe this isn't smart to say.
Yeah.
If you're not even going to look towards that, then you're being a lazy comic, and that's not accomplishing anything. At the same time, though, you have to kind of know which punches to pull and which ones to let loose.
Yeah.
So then when this article says, the debates over comedy's job to, quote, push the limits and make people uncomfortable may only be getting started, what with former superstars like Louis C.K. earning public rebukes for making inappropriate non-PC jokes in his new stand-up set. Louis C.K. is getting blowback because, if you don't know, he recently, after... Here's the context of Louis C.K. Louis C.K. last year got outed for being a person who publicly jerked off in front of female employees.
Yeah.
And sexually harassed them.
Mm-hmm.
And used his power and influence within the industry to hurt their careers.
Yeah.
He then disappears for a couple months, and then in his big planned comeback to comedy, instead of addressing those problems, instead of being self-reflective and being able to make self-deprecating jokes about how I'm a horrible, fucked-up human being, he pins it on the children. He then goes and says, man, this whole thing of I identify as this, I identify as that is bad, and all these Parkland kids are only famous because they were at a school that got shot, and you shouldn't care. Why are you, like, even... When you're doing that, you are then saying, well, I'm deflecting the anger that I have on myself for doing bad things to then pinning it on the people who outed me out for being a bad person.
Yeah.
That's the context in which that joke is being made.
Yeah, it's, I don't know how to describe this. It's weird because someone with that sort of power... I feel like if you have that sort of power, especially if you're in comedy, you should be making... To me, I feel like proper modern comedy is like, yeah, you might be making references to modern-day issues and that sort of thing, but what's the point of attacking like that group of kids in this?
Because it's one of those things where he goes, well, this makes me angry for some reason.
Yeah.
Because he thinks like, well, you know... Why are these kids speaking out? Why are they doing this?
Yeah.
Like, they should be kids. They should be just focusing in on their petty adolescence.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know. Is he trying to...
Well, cause the problem is that what we can all see through is that he's doing that because he's pissed off that he got called out for, like...
Doing something terrible.
Doing bad things.
Yeah.
Here's what... Judd Apatow actually tweeted out about this a couple of days ago, and he said something that was very, very profound about the Louis C.K. thing as I scroll through Twitter to try to find this quote.
Yeah, let me jump in real quick, because what I was thinking was someone like Louis C.K., in doing what he did, is I don't know if the special's even come out yet, or whatever the situation may be.
I don't think it was meant to come out. It was just being taped by the audience.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, I haven't seen the clip because I frankly don't give a shit. But
no.
Someone like him, it's like to me, it's difficult for anybody. Like, I feel like if I had this sort of power, it feels pointless to start marginalizing it and kind of just bringing down this group of innocent kids. Like, why not use that platform to do something productive and beneficial to society?
I found the quote. So Judd Apatow talked about this. He tweeted, "This hacky, unfunny, shallow routine is just a symptom of how people are afraid to feel empathy. It's much easier to laugh at our most vulnerable than to look at their pain directly and show them love and concern. Louis C.K. is all fear and bitterness now. He can't look inward. You have to look at it in the context of a man with children who mocks kids who are worrying about getting shot. A man who mocks our most vulnerable people. That's because he feels like no one cares about his pain, what he's been through. He feels like he was wronged, so attacks." Like, that's the perspective of mm-hmm. Judd Apatow looking and seeing, like, he will know that, like,
yeah.
you have to be... It's about intent. The point is, what is the intent here? The intent is, if Louis C.K. makes a joke about... and this is where I'm going to bring it back to my article that I was reading here.
Mm-hmm.
When Louis C.K. makes a joke about how he's angry at the... Parkland kids for, like, being hurt and, like, speaking out about the people who attacked their lives.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he is showing a lack of empathy for the struggle that they went through.
Yeah.
And is because within the context of what he is doing, he is saying, well, you all went after me, and aren't I, like, I was so wonderful, and now you're all, like, ganging up on me because of your political... agendas, you know, like that's what he's commenting on.
Yeah.
The intent in that sense is malicious.
Mm-hmm.
When the number one article on this article, when the number one bit of this list in this article about how Seinfeld is offensive and we should be dismissing it is number one, most offensive joke on Seinfeld, the soup Nazi.
Mm-hmm.
And then the description is what might be the most well-known joke from Seinfeld is also one of its most disappointing ones. Maybe in 1995 when the episode aired, it felt okay for viewers, but in 2018 when groups of neo-Nazis have become noticeably emboldened, using the term Nazi to label someone as a joke doesn't sit so well anymore.
Mm-hmm.
The intent is not to embolden the Nazis in the Seinfeld clip. The intent in the episode is that a show written and created by two New York Jews are commenting on the fact that the main character, who is very Jewish, is frequenting a soup stand where the owner of the place is so rude and strict that they refer to him as a Nazi, and the joke is that that's not what he is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're using it as an exaggeration. But the joke is not that, oh, Nazis exist. The joke is just using it as an hyperbolic exaggeration of strictness.
Yeah.
And that is the difference, is that it's not meant to be like, well, and also, the neo-Nazis existed in the 90s too, folks. The neo-Nazis have existed since the Nazis, because the Nazis never went away.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's like, it's not like that wasn't a problem in 1995 either.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, it's...
They got number two, the Indian giver joke. Joking about a Native American person being an Indian giver was never okay, and it's definitely not okay now. The joke is not that they're calling a Native American person an Indian giver. The joke is that the whole episode, Jerry Seinfeld, who is depicted in the show as an awful person and ends the series in jail, is using this terminology that is racially loaded, and he is reaping the havoc of it because it is crass and offensive, and he doesn't understand that. That is the point and purpose of the joke in that episode,
mm-hmm.
is that he's surrounded by people who aren't giving thoughts to others, and it is displaying why they are awful people, and isn't it bad that you would be so clueless to other people? That is the intent of that joke.
Well, the whole thing especially with Seinfeld, I mean, this show is, what, 30 years old at this point? I mean, the context of comedy at the time, I mean, that was 30 years ago. Comedy was much different 30 years ago than it is today. So... something that, I mean, and the fact that, like, things like this were funny in, the 90s when the show came out? I don't know exactly when it came out, if it was 30 years ago. 89. Okay, so yeah. So with it coming out in the 90s, I mean, with the culture of comedy then, that might have been funny at that time, but then nowadays for this to be an issue, to focus on something like that, I feel like it's pointless to look back at a show and be like, okay, this was offensive back then. Or no, back then it was funny, but now it's offensive. What's the benefit of now bringing it back up and focusing on something that's happened a long time ago, I guess is what I'm trying to get at.
Well, I don't think I agree with that sentiment. I think comedy hasn't changed too much. I think it has evolved. I get more irritated when I think the expectation is that, well, this was okay in the 90s. What are we even suggesting there?
Mm-hmm.
I think... comedy is exactly the same as it was in the 90s. Let's say this, okay? Let's say that just because a Marx Brothers movie was made in the late 30s, that doesn't mean that the comedy is now weaker because of the passage of time. A good joke is a good joke. And people are going to go back to see films like Duck Soup because they are still funny now. the same way they were funny back when they were first released.
Are you thinking it's a lack of so when people are being bothered by, like, Seinfeld, for example, is it a lack of context that they have?
I think it's a lack of context and intent. And also, if I may, I would say a look to at how the groups who are either being poked at or mentioned or made fun of or may have, you know, been caught in the crossfire, how those groups of people are actually reacting to what they have been given. Because I feel that that is a very, very important thing. They have in this article, one of the things is the episode The Outing from season 4, where the premise of the joke is that a reporter reports that Jerry and George are in a homosexual relationship, and they then are reaping the effects of that with the vast public thinking that they're gay. And the great legacy of that episode is that it came up with the phrase, not that there's anything wrong with that. Now, in this article, it asserts that it just isn't funny because it's displaying homophobia. Well, for one thing, it's not displaying homophobia. They go the whole episode saying, not that there's anything wrong with being gay. It's fine if that's who you are. That is not a problem. We just aren't gay. And then secondly, that episode won a GLAAD award. From, like, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance. Like, it won an award for, like, positive message of the gay community and positive representation.
So how does how does an episode like that stay relevant with the shift in modern society? Like, how people perceive that sort of thing now?
Because homophobia is still real.
Yeah, but I'm talking...
That's not changed.
I'm talking the humor of that episode. How can it be relevant now with the shift in thinking nowadays?
The shit I'm thinking now is that there are still bigoted people who think that it's something to be ashamed of being gay. That would be the thinking on my end, that is the people that should be poked fun at, all these people who, and all the, also the process of tabloids trying to break stories about celebrities, like, I got the scoop on this rumor that so-and-so is doing this and doing that. You know, there's many different subtext and layers in which...
I'm firing off these questions at you, but with the perception of the
discussion.
Yeah, with the perception of the show nowadays, is this a popular opinion? Like, is modern society as a whole taking offense to Seinfeld, or is this just like a?
I can't tell, because the truth is that there's a combo. I mean, this is coming off the heels of a couple weeks ago when the Fine Brothers posted their video of all these college kids saying how Seinfeld could never get screened today and a lot of people writing on that show would be fired and this is offensive and bad taste and everything. And if you look at, I can't speak for this Bustle article because Bustle doesn't have a comments section under articles, but if you look at the reaction of that Feinbo's video, pretty negative reaction. Big dislike bar. A lot of the comments are saying that people are taking the jokes out of context. I think even H3H3, even and Gila made a video on how tone deaf the video was to what the purpose of the joke was. Like, that's the thing to me. I don't. This is something that actually. I have two anecdotes here. The first one is a couple years ago, I think last year actually, I went to see John Cleese in Pittsburgh. He was doing a screening of The Holy Grail, and he was talking about the experience of making that film and all these things. And I can't remember the quote exactly, I have audio of it, but he said, you know, the thing that we look at is that there are all these dreadful things happening in the world. There's war in the Middle East, there's people starving in Africa, there's great dictatorships rising up from all these different countries, and we're over here in America worrying about someone said the wrong word. And he said, and the thing is that it becomes one of those things where we look at what's happening abroad and we go, oh, well, what can we do about this? We don't know, it's out of our hands, but we can stop someone from saying the wrong thing. So then we grab onto this and say, this is not right and we should do this and all that sort of thing. I think he's got a point. Another thing was when I was doing season 2 of Fan Fiction Drinking Games. And towards the end of the season, I had a message I talked with John Fox, who was the co-creator of the show. And he spoke to me about how he felt that what we were doing on the show was unfair and offensive, because a lot of the people who were writing these fan fictions on the internet were, you know, kids or whatever, and he's like, oh, they don't grasp English yet, and they don't know all this, da 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 da, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I said to him, John, they have taken the risk by putting out their work online for it to be judged by the masses. They have to be able to accept the criticism and accept the comments that are lobbied at them. If you are putting it on a public display, then you are running the risk of people finding it and judging it, you know, like giving it that kind of critique.
Mm-hmm.
I've written tons of bad stuff. I don't put it out onto the public because it's bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the first thing I ever wrote was a comedy sketch show that was just straight up a ripoff of Monty Python. And I wouldn't post it online and be like, here, look at this greatness, because it's not fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things, like, this is the thing that the internet has kind of allowed to happen, and it's one of those things where the development cycle now does not happen in private.
Mm-hmm.
No one shows up into the world fully formed anymore. It's not this sort of habit of the first thing that the mass public see from a director like Spielberg is his made-for-TV movie, like Chase, where it's, or whatever the name was, where it's these two cars driving in the desert and one of them's being chased by this big, like, semi-truck.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first film people see of Spielberg. They don't see the fact that he'd probably done, like, 200 really lousy home movies on his Super 8 camera at home.
Mm-hmm.
Because that wasn't meant for mass public. That was meant for just, like, here's something I wrote for me and for my friends, you know?
Yeah.
And the internet now has made the whole developmental stage of creation public. Now everyone sees someone's dirty laundry from when they were in their teens and they didn't have a clue how to make anything.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I'm guilty of that too.
I think everyone is.
Yeah. I'm like, the first video I ever made was when I was 15 years old and I didn't know how to film anything. I didn't know how to edit anything. And that video now, I can look back and go, yep, it's trash. It's not good. It's bad. It's an awful video. And people, like, were to watch it and comment and go, this is the worst thing I've ever seen, I'd be like, yep, it is. I'm not going to debate them on that, because the growth process is you start off doing horrible, 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 and now you're starting to get a little bit better.
Yeah.
You know, like, improvement is essential and key. The people who don't make it big, in my opinion, the people who struggle with creativity are those who create one thing and then repeat themselves again and again and again and again and again. And everything that they create is a carbon copy of the first thing they created.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no signs of improvement. There's no signs of growing and learning and looking at what you've done and going, can this be improved? Can this be changed? What can I do differently? Let me look into different approaches of this or that. What's that person doing? What's their influences? What's the context in which they're doing this? What's all these things?
Yeah.
I think people don't really look at the work that they're given anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it's easy now to just consume the mass junk pile of everything that's online.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why then it's one of those things, like, it's not impossible to make comedy more politically aware and more politically correct. That is not an impossible thing to do. The fear would be, like, does the artist or the audience have the time and patience to sit through the growth process and to sit through the improvement process?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't think they would.
Well, I think as a whole, I don't know, it depends on the audience, but also kind of falling back on that with, and I hate to bring this up, because quite frankly, I hate talking about him, but Louis C.K., if you're talking about growth process and that sort of thing, why give him the time of day? Some dude who's been doing this for decades, and it seems like his bit's not changed. Why give him the time of day and acknowledge what he's creating now if it's not going to change for the better?
Because I'll give you this counter. James Gunn.
Mm-hmm.
Who got fired from working on Guardians 3 because tweets of his from 10 years ago got posted back up and they were very offensive and very, you know, different.
Mm-hmm.
And then over the span of 10 years, he's shown himself to not be who he was in 2009 and shown to have grown and shown to have improved and shown to have said, I don't agree with those statements anymore. I don't relate to those anymore. And then the big business people go, yeah, but we don't want the people yelling at us about PC-ness coming down our throats, so we're just going to remove you instead.
Mm-hmm.
And then it affects the whole production process, because then all the crew and the cast who are expecting to work with that director go, well, he'd shown growth and he'd shown improvement and he'd shown that he had the ability to change.
Mm-hmm.
But no, we don't have the patience anymore to try to give you a chance to improve yourself and, you know, better yourself, so just get out of here.
Yeah.
I don't believe that works. You know, that I would say that if you want an example of it, yeah, James Gunn would be an example of someone who, like, would learn from his mistakes and go, yeah, that's not cool.
Mm-hmm.
That's not right, and would grow with it. But we are not giving them the chance to show that they have become better people because we're punishing them for whatever they did, you know, a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I don't agree with that mentality.
Well, someone like, I mean, this is something that's happened in the last few days. I mean, and it seems like an ongoing thing over the past couple of years, or, I mean, in this case, it seems like many, many years. I guess a better question is, who are the right people, who are the right kinds of people to pay attention to in this realm? I mean, who should you be supporting in this day and age?
Well, do you mean in just the comedy field, or in?
Like, I guess in the comedy field specifically, since we're on a topic. Like, it definitely doesn't feel right to support someone like Louis C.K. at this point, because it's just this ongoing, throughout the years, consistency of to me, just poor taste in comedy.
And it's not okay to support him. If he's going to respond after being called out for harassing women, if he's then going to respond by, well, here's my comedy now, making fun of kids who survived the school shooting, like, then that shows, okay, you didn't learn anything from the
exactly
crash.
Yeah,
you know, if I could relate this to a musical example, Public Enemy in the late 80s got a ton of stuff lobbied against them because Professor Griff made a statement in a newspaper where he claimed that Jewish people were responsible for most of the evilness in the world.
Mm-hmm. Hey, wait, can we pause real quick? I'm getting a phone call.
Okay.
I need to take this.
Yep.
Give me one sec. We'll pick back up here.
All right.
Professor, did that meet me? Well, we call him. Didn't hear you, so I call him back and listen. So.
When do you need to leave to make it down?
Well, he said 12:30, but still don't know where to meet him at. That's what I'm trying to figure out. Like, I texted him and stuff.
Okay, sorry about that. I got a meeting later today. And, like, well, technically it's supposed to be at 12:30, but it's, like, right across the streets, but I haven't figured out where it's happening at yet, so yeah, I'm sorry, if you want to pick up where you left off, if you remember.
Okay, so if I could relate this to a music example.
Yeah.
In the late 80s, Public Enemy came under fire for being called racist after one of their members, Professor Griff, made a comment in the newspaper that he felt that Jewish people were responsible for most of the evilness in the world. They then made an entire album called Fear of a Black Planet addressing that controversy and addressing that they didn't feel this way and that it was a stupid thing of them to say, and also talked about a lot of the public outcry that was surrounding them and their music.
Yeah.
And that album is genius, and it's brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, shows the power of when an artist can make a statement on their own bad press and their own, like, ignorance and their own sort of, like, mistakes. If they can actually show growth and improvement within it, and that they do not subscribe to these things, I think it is possible for them to have continued success.
Yeah, well, especially after they've been held accountable for that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it feels, I mean, especially in that situation, in a variety of other ones, I mean, if they've been held accountable and they've shown progress of course, this is just my take on it. I mean, but if they've been held accountable and they start to show progress, especially not only with themselves, but with the party they've affected in some fashion, I think that holds some merit. Whether or not you want to support that is another story, but I think that definitely holds some merit. Whereas someone like Louis C.K., I mean, bad things happen, held accountable, continues to do these bad things. I mean, it just...
Well, he's doing different bad things now.
Yeah, feels pointless to support him.
I mean, that's the thing. It's always about looking for intent and looking for context.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the background of what, you know, a joke or a piece of art is meant to represent or meant to hold a mirror to. And then you look at what the world around them feels about it, mm-hmm. how the world around them interprets that.
Yeah.
You know, that's the sort of thing that then weighs whether or not something, I would say that those are the factors that then decide whether or not a piece of work can be considered truly offensive.
Uh-huh.
And also, again, looking at how, if it is taking aim at someone, how is the person who is being aimed at responding? And how mm-hmm. how do they feel about how they've been portrayed, how they've been treated, what has been said about them,
mm-hmm.
you know? Like, that, I think, is a major factor in how you can judge whether or not something is really meant to be, like, hurtful or meant to just be a comment.
Yeah.
On something, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's nuance. It's gentle nuance. And I think the problem is that we're in an age now where no one looks at things in a nuanced way. Everything's black and white. Everything's a, you know, this is good. This is bad. This is righteous. This is evil.
Mm-hmm.
There's no, like, the reality of life is that it's a gradient.
Yeah.
You know? And you have to weigh it out. But I don't know if we have the patience to do that these days. So those are the things that ran through my mind reading this article.
Is that your weekly hot take?
That's my hot take. That's the thing about, though. This is the fun of living a podcast. Is
that I was waiting for you to, like, bring the mic up to your face again and go, hot take, like you've done. I think you've done it twice. I don't know. You've done it at least once. I need to start keeping a calendar of every time you bring the mic up.
Here's the difference is that I don't think I'm alone in this because I've gone to... No, I'm serious. Because I've gone to, like, lectures of different things where people yeah. have said similar things to this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, by a lot of people whose art and work I respect.
Mm-hmm.
It is... You need to judge nuance and you need to judge context.
What are some good examples of, like, if... Because I'm also curious myself because I've seen the John Cleese. I've seen a video of him explaining this, but some other lectures and or other people that, you know, someone could check out to kind of get more information on this because I want to learn myself.
All right, here's an example of here's an example of a comedian who did a joke and didn't really do it correctly and then later expressed regret.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a sketch that came out in the wake of the Charlottesville riots.
Okay.
Where on Saturday Night Live, Tina Fey was going to host. And mm-hmm. that was the weekend after all that went down.
Yeah.
And she did a sketch which depicted her as just like, here's how I'm handling it. I'm in my sweats. I'm at home. And I'm digging my face into this cake because, goddammit, I cannot handle it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was the joke. And the reaction was very mixed. People were going, well, what are you saying? Are you saying that we should not do anything? Are you saying that we should just run away and hide? Are you saying that we need to just distract ourselves? What is the point here?
Yeah.
And then in the wake of that, she went on David Letterman's new show on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much said, I was in the wrong. It was a misguided sketch. I was writing it on a plane, and I didn't know how to process it, and I thought that it was funny, and I don't believe in this mentality, and I think that I was misguided, and I wouldn't write something like that again.
Mm-hmm.
And to my knowledge, she hasn't. She's continued to be very successful working on all of her different projects, and people still adore her.
Yeah.
And I think that's an example of, like, where you can look at someone and be like, okay, this didn't land, and, you know, I'm definitely not going to do something like that again, and, you know, and then they then proceed not to do something like that again
mm-hmm.
and come back swinging.
Yeah.
Like, that would be an example to me of, like, someone who can pull it off successfully.
Okay.
So
I want to throw this out real quick because I think this is also a really good take on it. Is I think I mentioned it. I don't know if I mentioned it to you earlier or maybe I mentioned it to somebody else, but the Ezra Klein show. Ezra Klein interviewed Hasan Minhaj, who was he used to be a correspondent on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, and now he's got his own show.
Didn't he recently? Didn't Netflix delete one of his things for?
I think he deleted it.
That we were wrong for interfering with Saudi Arabia.
And I don't know if it was. I haven't seen it yet. I think it's definitely removed in Saudi Arabia because that's where was causing the most issue, but basically his new he was interviewing about his new show on Netflix and stuff, which is called Patriot Act, I believe. And his take on it, like, was he I don't know if this was before or after the Louis C.K. thing, but they were discussing kind of the implications of comedy modern day. You know, like what type of comedy should people be focusing on? You know, what's the most productive type of comedy? And I think there was a really good conversation on that. So if I were to throw out a suggestion, it's definitely that episode of that podcast. Part of the reason I was so concerned about this conversation going into it, just because, like, to me, the whole field of comedy is just kind of just a foreign thing to me, because I enjoy comedy, but I really know nothing about the culture and stuff.
Well, I mean, the problem is that the thing with comedy as an art form, and I do consider it an art form, is that it is the thing that is the easiest thing to offend and the quickest thing to date.
Mm-hmm.
That is its very nature, and there are bits that withstand the test of time, mm-hmm. and there are bits that do not.
Yeah.
That is just simply the nature of how comedy works. And that's why I think it becomes important in that scenario to look at what the comedian's intention was and what they were trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think if a joke... Because, I mean, like, everything dates.
Yeah.
It was over the past month, I was watching the Rudolph Red-Nosed Reindeer holiday special.
Mm-hmm.
You ever see the original 1964 version where after Rudolph leaves home, Donner is going to go out and look for his son, and then his wife and Clarice want to go with him to search, and then the narrator goes, but Donner told him, no, this is man's work.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, oof, that's not, that doesn't land as well in 2018 as it did in 1964.
Yeah.
Back in the house with you.
Oh, man.
Like, that was, I was like, oof, like everything dates. So mm-hmm. then the key then becomes, are we going to look at what its intention was and what the context of these jokes are
mm-hmm.
and what they're meant to represent in the story of the comedian?
Mm-hmm.
I think as time goes on, history is going to look better upon someone like Seinfeld, whose great contribution to television was saying, why don't we have a sitcom whose main emphasis is just telling jokes? And we're not here to show characters who go through any emotional growth or go through any great learning experience. There's a great story that the writer's room on Seinfeld had a phrase written in Latin that translated out to no hugging, no learning. And that was the mentality of Seinfeld. And there are shows that there is hugging and learning,
mm-hmm.
but Seinfeld was not one of those. And I think, with that said, though, I think history is going to look better upon Seinfeld, who just was focused on making jokes about four awful people in New York who acted selfishly and ended up in jail at the end of the series,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to Louis C.K., disgraced comedian, decides to come back swinging by complaining about all the people who called him out for harassing women and siding with the people who felt that he had been wrong,
mm-hmm.
making himself the victim of other people's tragedies.
Yeah.
I think history will look on that.
Will correct, will hopefully so. Correct itself, yeah.
I hope so, at least. I hope people are able to think of context and nuance on down the line.
Yeah. Well, if there's one thing from this whole conversation that I've learned is I've got a lot of learning to do. Well, because like I said, this whole thing of comedy, like this whole culture and this whole take is foreign to me. So, and being the person that I am, I would love to learn more about it. So yeah, okay.
I'd say it's worth looking at. Because my fear would then be that we look at, there's a show, this was another 90s show, called Duckman.
Yeah.
It was this animated underground show
mm-hmm.
where they had a stand-up comedian who went up there, told nothing but the most safe, inoffensive jokes you could ever imagine,
mm-hmm.
and was dreadfully unfunny.
Yeah.
And the lesson at the end of the show was that comedy should be meant to provoke, to offend, you know, but it should also be meant to show love and empathy.
Mm-hmm.
That's the main point of comedy. The point of comedy at its very core is to make people laugh.
Yeah.
And it's not saying that there won't be people who maybe get shocked or offended in the crossfire, but if the goal of comedy is to share love and passion and humor and make people happy, I would say that it is not within the best interest to try to do that by willfully harming and resenting others.
Mm-hmm. I think if you're going to be a comedian, you're going to start shocking and offending people. You got to start shocking and offending the right people. You know, it's not right to shock and offend like marginalized groups like the LGBTQ community and so on. Like, but if you're going to like start making riffs on Nazis and like bringing them down, that's, I feel like that's fair to make.
That's a fair thing to make. That's a different top. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So, but looks like we're getting ready to hit our time limit. I got a meeting to head to, unfortunately.
Yeah,
you gotta
run out the door, don't you?
Yeah, pretty soon. So, I guess we'll get wrapped up here.
I enjoyed this episode.
Yeah, so like I said, I was.
I don't know if you did, but
I was timid at first. But now, if anything, I am really curious about learning more about it. Honestly, I mean, I was holding back because I don't want to talk much about something I don't know much about.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So now I got some learning to do. Yeah. So, okay, but I gotta get out of here. Thanks to everyone who stuck around this long. I think we're around the hour mark at some point. I don't know. I can't, unless I have a timer on my phone going, I don't know exactly how long the episode is going for. So.
Well, you'll have to cut it down. You'll have to cut out the bit where you took that phone call.
Oh, yeah. So. That sort of thing. Which, if you're listening to it in the edit, hey.
He took a phone call.
I took a phone call, and you'll never know. But, my name is Aaron. That is Jacob. You can always find us on the internet. I am on Twitter and Instagram at Dale Ehrenhart. And Jacob, your links, please.
You can find me on Twitter at RemTWhitmer and on YouTube at Serenade of Caffeine.
And that's it. You can find those links in the show description as well. Be sure to subscribe to us. Leave a comment on your podcasting service of choice. I think hopefully by the time this comes out, we should be on Apple Podcasts and all that. I know we're on Stitcher and some of those other like Google Podcasts and other
Anchor doesn't mediums give me at the moment. Ability to comment, I've noticed.
Yeah, Anchor is pretty much just for hosting, it looks like. But in terms of distribution, I know we're on pretty much all the major ones except for Apple Podcasts. And I think that's just because they have a holiday backlog. So
they got to get through.
Yeah. So, be sure to tune in next week. We're talking about something else, probably. That's what we do. Let's talk about things. I think at some point we need to talk about not only. I know how we talked about our 2018s on the last episode, but I think we should talk about the tour experience we had back in 2017,
yes.
Almost
absolutely, yes,
year and a half ago at this point. So
we'll do a big in-depth. That'll be next episode. Next episode, folks, we're doing an in-depth look at the What's Missing tour of 2017.
Maybe I'll bring on Zayn and some of the other people on the tour too. We'll have a big discussion about it.
I'd love that. Just because
that would be fun.
Gotten to speak to Zayn in a while.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so that'll be next week's episode. Look forward to that. And thanks everyone for listening.
Bye bye.